We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome, everyone. This is the National Association of Elementary School Principals premier virtual book talk series. We are so excited to see so much today for this exciting book talk conversation with two leading innovative educators, learners, and premier authors, Tom Murray and Eric Scheninger. We are so pleased to have so many of you join us for all of the book series that we've had this spring-summer series. And we're very excited to have all of the new visitors and participants who will join us today for this book talk. This book talk will feature an award-winning new book called Learning Transformed, 8 Keys to Designing Tomorrow's Schools Today. Eric and Tom are going to have a courageous conversation with us to challenge our thinking, to help us think deeply about how to take a more personal approach to ensuring that our students become successful citizens in a global society. And so we're looking at how we can transform the way that we look at K-12 education system of being effective in teaching practices, as well as monitoring how students are learning. And so we have a great opportunity today to learn from two great leaders in the field who have also served as award-winning school principals, covering from elementary, middle, and also high school level. So you're going to get a diverse perspective in many of the various school levels of how we can shift our thinking, be more personalized in our actions and intentional in how we're shifting practice with teaching and learning paradigms. I want to tell you a little bit about our association, the National Association of Elementary School Principals. Our association is one of the premier associations that support elementary and middle school principals. We also support all principals who want to learn more about deepening their practice around teaching and learning and provide resources for them to be successful in helping students with 21st century skills and other learning developments that will support them for a life of success and accomplishment. In the National Association of Elementary School Principals, we also have what's called the National Panel of New Principals, where we support first and second year principals with resources and acknowledge their ideas and their challenges through professional learning opportunities. And so we encourage you to go to the learning site to learn more about our National Panel of New Principals and our virtual book talk sessions. In addition to that, I want to thank Ed Webb for being our sponsor, our partner in this work. They have helped us leverage technology to support teaching and learning practices, and we're very proud of our partnership. So we want to thank you, Ed Webb team, for supporting us for today and throughout the series. We also want you to know that we have a proud sponsor who will be providing 25 books, signed autograph books from both Tom and Eric to share with the first 25 registered participants who are also participating today in this live session. And so we look forward to providing the first 25 participants with this great opportunity with the autograph book from Tom and Eric. Now I would like to transition and tell you a little bit about our premier authors today. We have Tom Murray, and I'm going to share a little bit about his background. Tom Murray is currently serving as the Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools, a project of the Alliance for Excellent Education. It's located in Washington, D.C. Tom is also a former school principal and teacher and Director of Technology. He is very passionate about proper digital learning implementation and personalized professional learning. Tom has co-authored several award-winning books, have authored great books on transformation, leadership, and digital learning implementation and transformation. And we're very proud to have him with us today to share more insights into this new book of learning about these specific 8 keys for learning transformed. Also with us, our colleague Eric Scheninger is the Senior Fellow and Thought Leader on Digital Leadership with the International Center for Leadership in Education. Prior to this, he was an award-winning principal at New Milford High School in New Jersey. And under his leadership, the school became a globally recognized model for innovative practices. He successfully saw the implementation of several sustainable change initiatives that radically transformed the learning culture and increased student achievement. He has focused on various models of learning through digital age. He has also led the formation of pillars of digital leadership, and he is also the author of several award-winning books, co-authors of award-winning books tailored around improved communication, public relations, positive brand presence, discover opportunity, and transforming learning spaces. Without further ado, I would like to introduce to you two award-winning thought leaders in the field, practitioners who really can bring excellent insights and lessons learned to all of us, Tom Murray and Eric Scheninger. Please help me welcome them.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It is great to be with you all. Thank you for having us. Thank you for investing the time on this Monday. We're guessing that many of you have started your break or started the summer, and thanks for diving in with us today. We really, really appreciate that. You know, Eric and I spent well over a year, almost a year and a half, diving into what actually works. How do we truly transform learning? Where's the evidence? Where's the research? What does it really take? What are the stories around the world and around the country of things that are going on that are absolutely incredible? And we're excited to highlight some of those. We'll say from the get-go that in 50 minutes, we certainly cannot cover it all. And when we refer to research and we refer to evidence, we have over 190 citations that we've been able to share throughout the book to be able to really dive into what is it that actually works. I'll say from the get-go, I honestly believe there's probably a lot of fluff out there right now in education, probably in a lot of different industries. And we really wanted to boil it down into what actually works. How do we do this? How do we best support? And a shout out to our principals from an ESP or an ASSP that are on here as well in the work moving forward. Just a quick thank you. Thanks for all that you do for kids. You know, we'd like to begin by just simply saying thanks. Thanks for the late nights. Thanks for the early mornings. And thanks for all you do to love and care about kids, because we're in the people business and we certainly want to make sure that we keep kids at the heart of that. But thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy. And thank you for your efforts. So let's dive into this sense of urgency and let's take a snapshot of where we are. You know, some of these statistics we can look at globally for sure. All of these we could in different capacities. But where does some of this data currently tell us? And NAEP is just one snapshot. And again, any one of these is just one snapshot, one avenue, one area. But when we look, this is U.S. specific data. And for I see many other countries represented. This is also you could take a look at your data here. And we chose the U.S. to show in this example. But when you take a look at percents of students as to where they need to be, and you take a look at kind of the sense of urgency of how do we shift this system? How do we truly buck this trend? When we look at some other pieces, this is one of the pieces that Eric and I use in our intro. We take a look at this Gallup student engagement survey. And let me show you this real quick. So Gallup surveyed over a million kids in 2015. End number was, or close to a million kids. End number was about 930,000 or so from coast to coast, across the board. Take a look at what this data shows us. Another way to look at that is this is feedback to us from the kids that we're serving. So this question in particular looked at students that reported being engaged in school. And if you take a look, my slide deck disappeared. Oh, on my end. If you take a look at the, there we go, thank you. If we take a look at the student engagement survey, look at fifth grade. If 75% are kids, 3 out of every 4, and look what happens. It goes down in 6th, down in 7th, down in 8th, down in 9th, down in 10th, down in 11th, where it bottoms out. And then it ticks up senior year. And we attribute that to kind of that, oh shoot, I've got to graduate. But just look at that data. Look at the notion, the blue line of I have fun in school. And this is the percentage of students in those grade levels telling us that school's any fun. How about this one? The adults at this school care about me. And look at those percentages dropping, kind of in free fall there until it gets to that less than 1 in 4 of our high schoolers. Why is that? What is this data and this feedback from kids telling us? And how do we transform this? And as Eric and I dive into so many different facets of the data that's out there, talking to real school leaders and seeing what their struggles are, and then noticing and looking at this, one of the things that the Gallup survey is telling us is currently in our traditional system, the longer students are with us, the less fun and the less engaged they become. We have to disrupt this. But here's what we know. Eric and I work with thousands of school leaders across the world every year. And truly, we know that today's educators are some of the most dynamic, talented people on the planet. And every one of you on this webinar and every one of us in school leadership are part of the solution. Our kids need and deserve our best. You know, to prepare our students for their world of work tomorrow, we have to transform their learning today. With that, we're going to dive into, and I'm going to turn it over to Eric here in just a moment, 8 key areas. What is it that the research was showing when we look at all across the board, the different areas that school leaders have to transform? And we wanted to arm school leaders with their research and the pedagogy best practices. And how do we shift part of those systems and shift practice? It is not an easy task, but we're going to take a look at leadership and school culture. And Eric's going to dive in there in just a moment. How do we redesign the learning experience into one that's personal and authentic? What about this notion of, we coined the return on instruction? It's kind of the new ROI. How do we ensure that return on instruction? What about learning spaces? How do we make the spaces that the learning's taking in more learner-centered? And then to do that, what about professional learning? How do we move professional learning from the top-down, sit-and-get, one-size-fits-all to one that's personal in nature? To how do we use technology as an accelerant? And where's the money being spent well? To how do we collaborate with the community? To then ultimately, how do we ensure sustainability that we are built to last? And so when we take a look at this, we're going to dive in, we're going to have some fun. We're also going to be taking a look at some questions throughout. Eric and I will be pointing to questions. We want to see your thoughts and your answers in the chat, and we're going to do our best to respond to them and some of those as well. So I'm going to be turning it over to my co-author, Eric. And Eric, why don't you go ahead and jump in on leadership and school culture?
All right. Thanks, Tom. And let me also thank you all for being here with us this afternoon, this evening, this morning, depending on where you're at. You know, when we look at what has the most significant impact on learning and ultimately student achievement, it's the quality of the teacher. But when we look at culture, when we look at all of our classrooms, we look at our schools, we look at our districts, we look at our broader organizations, you know, it really is, how does leadership function to help bring about a culture that gives kids, has kids develop core competencies to succeed in this bold new world of work? And as we think about, you know, leadership, and we think about how, you know, school culture, you know, really sets the foundation, you know, we came up with this acronym. And the irony, not the irony there, but when we look at this acronym for leaders, Tom and I were, I wouldn't say we were pleasantly surprised, but there's so much research that aligns with effective leadership. You know, we found that all effective leaders are the best learners. Effective leaders empower others to be the change. They adapt. They look at fear as not forget everything and run, but face everything and rise. They adapt to a myriad of challenges and help to create a new normal, a better normal, moving from business as usual to business as unusual. The best leaders, whether they're teacher leaders, principals, superintendents, the best leaders create a culture of leaders. You know, as a principal, with my assistants, my job was to make them principals, allow them to be principals when they move forward with their careers. But you can't do that if you don't delegate. The best leaders also engage, both physically and virtually. The best leaders reflect. The best leaders also serve. So as we think about what the research is telling us, you know, as you think about leadership, you know, what qualities make up a dynamic learning experience? As you think about how you lead your classrooms, your schools, your organization, your district, your community, what qualities make up a dynamic learning experience? Feel free to share in the chat box, you know, because we want to see. It's not as much what, you know, Tom mentioned, we point to so much research, but we also look at innovative practices in action, you know, how the research actually translates into changes to teaching, learning, and leadership. But what qualities make up a dynamic learning experience from your point of view? And as you're sharing in the chat box, you know, when we develop this acronym for leaders, learning, you know, learning really is the fuel of leadership. If we're not learning, we can't lead. When we look at the E in leaders, empower? How do you empower your kids to be their best? How do you empower your colleagues to take risks? How do you give them autonomy? You know, how do you utilize empathy to empower? So think about, again, the qualities of leadership. Think about how you empower. I mentioned about the importance of adapting. You know, change isn't coming. Change is on our doorstep. So we have to adapt and eventually evolve and really think about what defines us, what do we do well, but more importantly, what do we want to be for our kids? And in order to do that, we have to adapt. Think about how you delegate tasks. You will not have all the answers. You don't have to do all the work. Think about how you can do a distributed, we found so much research on shared ownership, distributed leadership. Think about how well you delegate. Think about how well you engage. And it's not just face-to-face. Nothing is more important than face-to-face, but how you engage in digital spaces. The best leaders are the best communicators. They meet their stakeholders where they're at. They engage in two-way communication to build powerful relationships. We have to do that face-to-face and in digital spaces. As we come to the end of our acronym, reflection. You know, whether you're writing in text, you're listening, thinking quietly, we need to reflect. Reflect in order to grow. Reflect in order to improve. Reflect to move our cultures forward. And the beauty of leadership now is we can reflect openly, privately, using so many digital tools. We can help others learn from our mistakes. And we can learn from not just the successes, but the challenges of others. But we can't learn if we don't openly reflect and share our reflections. And finally, leaders are servants. They are servants to kids first and foremost. You know, we don't work for parents. We don't work for boards of education. We don't work for our communities. We don't work for taxpayers. We don't work for trustees. We work for kids. And as we think about servant leadership, it's about that will. The will to do what's best for our kids, no matter what. And the will is the intentions, what I say, and most importantly, also the actions, what I do. And you can see all the characteristics on the right that embody great servant leaders: foresight, vision, a focus on transformation, building awareness, empathy, persuasion, listening, team development, stewardship, and building community. So as you think about your ability to lead change, leadership is about action, not about position, title, or power. How do you empower your colleagues to take risks? So please feel free to share in the chat ways that you empower your colleagues, fellow teachers, fellow administrators, board members, parents. How do you empower people to take risks? What have you seen in your practice that's been successful? And as you're sharing in the chat box, I'm going to continue to number two. You know, the learning experience must be redesigned and made personal, not just personalized, which is our policies, our structures, our procedures, our curriculum, but how do we make learning personal? And as we think about the skills that kids were expected to have in 2015, we need to make learning more personal, because look at the skills that are needed in 2020. Look at how kids have to be complex problem solvers, critical thinkers, creativity, manage others, coordinate, emotional intelligence, better judgment, decision-making, service orientation, negotiation, cognitive flexibility. So the key to those skills is to reach our kids at a personal level. And I love this image that Tom often shares. You know, back in the day, content was king. We were so focused on knowledge, but that knowledge has to translate into an experience that means something. And that's why Tom has that creativity crossed off. And how do we make it personal? So how do the kids construct new knowledge and create an artifact, demonstrate mastery of learning in ways that mean something to them? So how do we make learning personal? Often we start with the what. But we need to focus on not the what and not the how. We need to focus on the why. Why will these new strategies help our kids be better learners? Why should we integrate technology? Why should we rethink the very DNA of our schools across the world to better prepare our kids for a world that we have no idea what it's going to look like? So let's start with the why. And let's talk about how we make learning personal. Does it matter what grade level of kids you have? We want our kids to think. We shouldn't integrate technology and innovative ideas at the peril of high-level learning. We want learning to be rigorous. We want it to be deeper. We want it to mean something. So you see that on the vertical axes, knowledge taxonomy, high order thinking. We want learning to be personal. It's got to be relevant. How do kids apply it across disciplines, multiple disciplines, real world problems that are predictable, real world unpredictable problems? As we think about making learning personal, this is what it's all about. Moving from quad A to quad D. You know, we talk about knowledge, experience, and making it personal. Right here in this box, the kids have the competence to think in complex ways. They can apply their skills and knowledge in ways we could never have imagined. When it confronted with unknowns, they have extensive knowledge and skills to come up with creative solutions. We get kids to think, apply, internalize, become divergent thinkers, and really understand it could be anything they want to be. Whether it's innovation or technology, it's not about an add-on. We want to make learning personal. We want kids to think. Look at all the different ways that kids can argue, conclude, create, explore, invent, modify. Look at all the different ways we can make learning personal by letting kids choose the right tool for the right task. And what's the key here to personal learning? Pedagogy has to change. Assessment has to change. The way we give feedback to our kids has to change. And what has to change? Moving from skills to core competencies. Having kids the competencies, the knowledge, the skills, the aptitude, the behaviors. And how do we do that? We focus on making the work rigorous. We focus on making the work relevant. And we make sure there's higher forms of engagement. Research has shown that it's not technology innovation that's going to improve achievement for our kids. We have to think about that interactive learning experience, make it personal for our kids, and think about all the research that we're well-grounded in, whether it be Dewey, Papert, Vygotsky, Piaget, Bloom. There is research has been around for so long that still holds true today for project-based learning, student ownership of learning, and collaborative learning. But we have to be squarely focused on making the experience personal for our kids. So as I move on to the third key before I turn it over to Tom, think about accountability and efficacy. Teaching, learning, and leadership have to change. We have to hold ourselves accountable for that change if we want to see efficacy in our work. So Tom and I have really looked at this fact, you know, around the world, not just in the United States, around the world, we spend billions and billions and billions of dollars on educational technology. The money you spend, the money your school spends, how do you know that money that you're spending is having an impact that's improving learner outcomes and ultimately achievement? We can look at data. The OECD report found that countries that invested the most in technology, negative correlation to student achievement. The OECD report didn't say that technology can't improve achievement. It said the only way it will is if teaching, learning, and leadership change. And as we look at this change, we have to hold ourselves accountable, ladies and gentlemen. We can't be chasing all the flashy tools. We can't be grasping on to the nice, big, fluffy ideas, which sound great, but in practicality, aren't going to get us to where we need to be. And it's not accountability to fire and get rid of people. It's accountability to raise the bar. What is the quantitative and qualitative measures? What is the data telling us? How are we transforming observation and evaluation? Are we submitting artifacts to show how assessment is changing, how grading is changing, how our pedagogy, our projects, our student work is changing? And are we creating portfolios, K-12, to show how learners are growing over time? That is what we mean by return on instruction. Tom.
So what's fascinating is I want you to take a moment wherever you are, and I want you to just visualize in your mind, what is the average, and I guess we're overgeneralizing in our mind, but what's the average third or fourth grade classroom look like? What is the average 11th or 12th grade classroom physically look like? You see, when Eric and I dove into the research, and one of the pieces that I'll tell you is I learned a heck of a lot writing this book. I learned far more during the process than I've learned in a long time. I can tell you that. And looking at things like the learning spaces matter. And so let's dive into this notion of taking a look at learning spaces. You know, look at those images side by side. In the past 100 years, how much has really changed? You know, Eric and I go to schools all the time. Every week we're in schools all across the world. And what's really fascinating is that in some schools, a lot has changed. Everything's changed. And learning looks drastically different than 100 years ago. But in some places, it virtually looks identical. And I mean physically looks. We've got very teacher-centric environments, teachers standing up front, looking out in desks and rows and all facing forward at the same time. you know, I happen to be in Dallas, Texas today, but I live out in Pennsylvania and I don't live too far from Gettysburg. And if you've seen me speak or present before on this, you've probably seen me share this because I've been sharing this for a while. And it's something that Eric and I also worked into the book, because we believe truly that we're suffering from what we call the cemetery effect. Out in Pennsylvania, I was out near Gettysburg one day and I was driving through and I noticed this cemetery on the side, and the sun was setting. And as I took a look, I pulled over just to kind of capture the view. And I was leaning over the wall and I was looking. And as I took a look at the tombstones, I noticed that they were equidistant from another. They were all facing in one direction. The place was well meticulated and well maintained. And I really have no idea why it hit me the way it did. But what I realized is if I drew that cemetery pencil and paper on a map, and I drew the very first classroom that I created for myself as a fourth grade teacher on a map, they would have been identical. And is that how kids learn best? You know, we put the tennis balls, the smart board, and take a look at that image. It's eye-opening. Is that how kids learn best? Now, the research, and we pointed out, will show that there is a time and place where kids do need to work quietly and independently and reflect and be by themselves and be able to do some of that. The problem is, how many times, especially, and let's over-stereotype here, especially at secondary quite often, is that the majority of the way learning is becoming? How in the world can we talk about all these, I'm not going to call them 21st century skills, because by the way, we're 17 years in. I'm going to call them life skills of problem solving, collaborating, and all those types of things. How many times are we saying as districts that we're problem solving, we're collaborating, we're doing all this great stuff, and yet we walk into our classrooms and they look like that? You see, does the pedagogy match the space? If we're talking about collaboration, can kids constantly be islands unto themselves? It doesn't mean we never do it. It doesn't mean we never have them work quietly or work independently. But is that the norm in our schools? You see, we take two other images and we put them side by side. That is a wake-up call. And even for those of you around the world, I challenge you to think about, what does the space look like? Because the space matters. Now, hear me out, and especially for the admin in the webinar here. The moment I start to talk about spaces, I know what starts to go through your mind. Dollar signs, money. We don't have money for all brand new furniture, but you got to look at the research. The research isn't talking about spending millions of dollars in furniture to fix this problem. That is not the case. So one of the things I want you to wrestle with over there in the chat is, how are you, is your school or your district redesigning learning spaces? Maybe you are building something new. Well, you've got a great luxury there. Maybe it's just starting in a classroom. Maybe it's just starting in a library or one place in the building. What are you doing to redesign the learning spaces? So let's talk quickly about some of the research relating to learning spaces. And again, Eric and I really dive into this in the book. But when we take a look at the spaces themselves, one of the pieces, let me give you a couple aspects here. One of the pieces related to things such as naturalness. The more we can make things like nature, that's colors, that's our surroundings, the better off the kids are in that environment. Let me give you another example. When we look at the symbols around the room, there was multiple studies that we cite here. You walk into the classroom and you look at the symbols around the room. Maybe I'm teaching high school social studies and I walk in and the symbols around the room of success happen to all be white males. Multiple studies have shown what that will do to the female psyche subliminally in that room of, gee, to be successful, I have to be a white male. Or about the students of color in our classrooms. You see, so much of this also throughout our book, there's a strand of equity, because all means all. The conversations we're having today are not for just the gifted kids. This is all means all, especially in our underserved areas. Let me give you a couple more pieces. The colors we use. Color impacts mood, and mood impacts our brain receptors. And so we can learn differently, simply colors being part of it. Another aspect related to the research, things such as daylight impacts mood, impacts brain function. When you took a look at, and I'll just share one more here. Walk into classrooms, and especially I can think back to being an elementary principal, and I had some wonderful, wonderful teachers. But I remember walking into first grade or second grade classrooms, and there's stuff on every single wall, and every square foot of that entire classroom is covered, and you're bobbing and weaving around the classroom to get around. But in highly distracted classrooms, that research will show that kids that struggle with distraction will be off task an additional 17% in an environment that has so much stuff. Why? Because there's so much stuff in it. And so those are things that I just listed that really cost little to no money. Sure, if you're redoing a building, we want to make sure that, gee, we don't put in the same number of outlets that we did 30 years ago. That just doesn't make sense. Yet some of our architects, that's how they're building. And so when we talk about space, this is not a conversation in our book about, oh, go get $1 million and we can solve all your problems. This is about being smart with the resources that we do have, and how do we redesign? And Eric and I in the chapter, really, we have a redesign on a dime in 18 different ways, I believe it is, to, with very little to no money, really shift the learning and the spaces in it. You see, the pedagogy that we're shooting for, does the space match what we're looking for in that environment? If it doesn't, we need to do something about it. You know, let's dive into professional learning. I'm going to turn this one back over to Eric on key number five.
We think about our kids, and we have to put most effort in our kids, making learning personal. But you want to know something? It's just as important for the adults. So as we think about professional learning, you know, what does the research tell us? What, and let's forget the research for a moment. What do you want out of your own professional learning? So as we think about learning, let's think about agency. And we hear so much talk about student agency, choice, voice, advocacy. But if you want to make learning personal for the adults, agency for educators, for teachers, for principals, for superintendents, for heads of school is just as important. So we looked at what the research said about improving professional learning. And one big thing is accountability. Accountability, looking at a core set of research of how we learn best, looking at brain research. But let's also look at this concept of agency. And, you know, we go through so many different examples. This is a short list, you know, of how agency can make learning personal for adults, whether it's educators using their voice, flipping meetings so that they're actually learning meetings. When we think about distributed and shared leadership, co-planning professional learning. How about having a student create a wooden box where you actually use paper, like they do in restaurants and businesses, to collect comments on how not only how we can improve learning for the adults, but how we can improve learning for our kids, how we can improve our culture. Think about choice. At my school, my amazing media specialist, Laura Fleming, created a micro-credential platform to acknowledge the informal learning of the adults. That micro-credential platform is now used K-12 across my former district. Another thing that we did at my school, we implemented Genius Hour for the adults. I gave my staff a job-embedded growth model, 2 to 3 48-minute periods per week to learn instead of doing non-instructional duties. Innovative, creative, purpose-driven, but also connected to their end-of-the-year evaluation. Think about budgeting. You know, it shouldn't be the people with titles that determining where all the money goes. We empowered our staff. And think about that acronym again. All this comes back to what great leaders do. I distributed the funds and I told my teachers, you know your kids best. Keep me in the loop, but you figure out how you're going to make that money, how you're going to spend that money to impact learning. And let's think about advocacy. When we, you know, make learning personal in our school, you know, how do we advocate through forums and idea sharing? And idea sharing can be now done anonymously through digital tools to build trust. If you don't have trust, you can't build relationships. And without relationships, no real learning will ever occur. And many of us are here on EdWeb today because of the glorious real-time web. We can learn anytime with anyone, anywhere on the planet. We have people from all over the world joining us today. And we hope that you'll engage with us afterwards with LT8 Keys as you read the book and look at the research and share your own ideas. But think about creating your own personal learning network. Two-way flows, the best ideas, the best strategies, feedback, questions. Personal learning network, I love this image from Howard Jarsh from Canada. It's about seeking, sensing, and sharing. Find the people that motivate you, find people that push your thinking, observe what other people are doing, see what works, and share what you're doing in your schools, in your districts, share your successes. Publish so that we all can learn from your greatness. The best knowledge, the best ideas are happening right now in our schools, in our classrooms. We got to share more. And why does a personal learning network work for leaders? You get the support and feedback you need anytime, anywhere. Work smarter, not harder. Share your amazing work. Remove silos. All education systems have in some form or another. 24/7 inspiration. Get the best resources. Collaborate locally, globally. Track conferences through a hashtag. Get the latest innovative ideas and learn on the go. If you are the smartest person in the room, you are in the wrong room. Make your room the entire world. How is your school or district shifting professional learning to be more engaging, relevant, and personal? Please share some ideas. Tom and I gave you a few of ours. We share more examples from schools across the world that are doing all this great stuff to make learning personal. But what are you doing? Well, how are you really going from business as usual to business as unusual to transform learning in your school? Tom, back to you.
You know, Eric, just doing a little bit of reflection before we hit this sixth key here. And a couple of the things that I'm seeing in the sidebar, some great conversation, everybody. Really appreciate you taking the time to share your thoughts in there. Going back to a couple of comments about learning spaces, and I saw some people saying, you know, I get this and I want to do these spaces differently, but my room is so darn crowded and just having the sheer numbers of desks, there's really not a whole lot I can do. And I understand certainly that that's the reality of it. One of, for some of you, and some of the pieces here, a couple of thoughts is one, for teachers that are feeling that way, I really encourage you to certainly connect with your principals or district leaders and making sure that they're aware of some of the research related to learning spaces and how it does impact learning. But with that and that environment too, one of the things we often leave out when we talk going back to the learning space piece is having conversations with kids. You know, quite often do we ever ask of, hey, if this is our space, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, like, how could we redesign it as a team to do this better? What about student input? If I'm a principal, pulling kids aside and say, are there any places in our building that kind of cause anxiety? Are there any places in our building where if we had $200 or $100 or no money at all, that if we redesign, we gave you run with it, would you design it differently? And see what kids say. We've seen incredible things coming up. About the piece on PD that you were just covering there, Eric, and saw some of the things going on. A lot of people mentioning social media and connecting via Twitter and connecting via even places like EdWeb and this and learning on the go. And when we take a look at professional learning, one of the things that Eric and I really dove into is when you look at the research on PD and what actually works, the top down, one size fits all, sit and get, hours-based accountability really doesn't show any impact on achievement. And we spend billions of dollars a year on it. Why? Because it's easy to put in a contract. It's easy to tally hours. I work with state departments all across the country. I completely understand the hours requirement. But truly, when we're measuring hours, we're in seat time, we're measuring the seat time, we are measuring the wrong end of the learner. And so how do we make it? How do that we share that ownership? And principals, how do we empower our teachers? You know, sometimes our best staff developers are not our administrators. Sometimes they're teaching in our classrooms every day. How do we empower to give them voice and to give them choice, but it's at the same time balance the needs of district-wide initiatives or implementation where everybody does have to have a common understanding that balance is key. So let's dive into sticks. And this key here is that technology must be leveraged and used as an accelerant for student learning. You know, we are teaching the Netflix generation of kids. My little girl at 7 years old has no concept of what it's like to have to wait until next Tuesday at 7 o'clock to watch her favorite TV show. None. She gets her content and learning on demand the moment she wants it, so long that mom or dad says it okay. Well, that puts us in an interesting spot. You see, if we as teachers, if our mindset is that I'm content delivery, well, newsflash, truly, we've been outsourced. If that's all we're truly thinking we're doing, if it's just content, we've been outsourced by YouTube and Netflix. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Of course, the greatest teachers in the world and the teachers that I know could not be replaced by Netflix and YouTube. But we've got to be more than just content, because that content is available anytime, anywhere on demand. So what is it that actually works when we come to this technology notion moving forward? This goes back to that return on instruction that Eric and I talked about. You know, we spend billions of dollars a year, just as Eric said earlier, on technology purchasing. As budgets have remained stagnant over the past decade, decade and a half, technology spending has continued to go through the roof. One of the stories that I tell, you know, when I was a tech director in my last few years, the school board president looked at me, and this was my last budget meeting. And no, I didn't get fired. I was already going to Washington, D.C. And it was the last budget meeting, my last school board meeting ever. And the school board president looked at me and said, so, Tom, if we spend this additional, and it was a certain dollar amount in technology, will student achievement increase next year? And process that question. Let that soak in there for a minute. You see, how is it that we can spend sometimes millions of dollars and sometimes feel like, well, I don't know. I mean, here's the person that's responsible for signing his name on the dotted line of taxpayer money of millions of dollars, or in this case, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars additionally, we've got to be able to understand what it is that actually works. You see, so many practices when it comes to tech are a total waste of money right now. But what is it that works? So let's dive into some of the research. So my home organization, the Alliance for Excellent Education in Washington, D.C., also where we run Future Ready Schools out of, bipartisan nonprofit, really dove into the research. Dr. Linda Darling-Hammond, one of the top known researchers in the world, and also gave a nice, real nice endorsement about her book, which we're proud of. Dr. Linda Darling-Hammond really dove into for a year without the Alliance of what actually works. And so when you take a look at this study here with her team out of Stanford, she did a meta-analysis of over 70 EdTech studies answering that question of what is it that actually works? And it really looked at, in that case, at-risk students, because so much money that we're spending is related to at-risk students. And it boils down to three things. Number one, is the learning interactive? How much is the student doing in it? And we'll talk about a different way to phrase that in just a minute that I like even better. Number two, it's the use of technology to explore, to design, to create. That's where the magic happens. But if you think about things like Webb's depth of knowledge and Bloom's taxonomy, it's really overlapping the higher level ends there. You know what it's not, though? It's not what it was to be, in my opinion, probably the most prevalent practice with technology in our country. And that's the digital drill and kill. It used to be in a worksheet and inside of a folder sitting in a desk. And now it's digitized and we're celebrating that we're paperless and we've shifted nothing. We're just spending more money. And if that's how we're doing it, and it's so prevalent that OECD reports in places like that are, more technology we add, the more learning that doesn't happen. Well, thanks, Captain Obvious, because it's not about the tech. The tech is a dynamic tool if used well, or a colossal waste of money if not. And third, it's the right blend of teachers and technology, which is something we've always known. What's right for one kid is different from another. And to explore, let me just give you some quick examples of this. If you're familiar with a site like this, this is a Google project early on. Zygote allows you to explore the human body and talk about use of technology to explore. You see, your mind and your brain can only perceive things in one way if you're looking at a static image in a textbook. But if I can dive into something like the body in a three-dimensional way, my brain can receive that information differently. Or what about a site like this, Constitute? This allows you to pull constitutions from all around the world and compare and contrast and previous constitutions and current ones and think about what a free resource allows you to do in a dynamic way. So here, this came out of the Our Code where my daughter was at this point in time. And what they're doing is they're designing the beginnings for Ozobots. See, one of the latest bandwagons that's out there is all this STEM stuff. Now, hear me out before you make a judgment. We're buying all these robots and we're putting them all out there. And if all we're doing with the robots is taking the controller, taking the iPad and driving the robot around and celebrating that we're doing this wonderful stuff, shame on us. Because I drove a remote control car 30 years ago. And if that's what we think the learning is, we're wasting money. Yet when we look at something like this, and here they are using Ozobots, you see, the point is not that the robot will drive around it. The point is in the design process, those intro to computer science skills. That's where the magic happens, in that design and not in the actual piece. That's the reward. When I look at this, that's my little girl in the pink, what she had to do here. And I love what her librarian did. If you're a librarian on here, thank you for your work. You are brilliant and amazing people. And there's my little girl and what she had to do. And I love what the librarian asked her to do. This is during Hour of Code after school one day. She had a flat two-dimensional image. And what she had to do is she had to create it using that. But then the flip side, the second thing she had to do is to create something. There's the word, create something that she didn't think existed in the world in her little five-year-old brain, and then write about what it did. When do we give kids opportunities to design, to create? You think about the traditional world of schooling, what do we often do? We tell kids, here's exactly how it is, has to be. This is the exact content. This is the exact recipe to get it done. This is exactly how we're going to assess it. And then sometimes we sit back and we're like, how come the kid can't think for themselves? Because we've been doing the thinking for them quite often. And to design and to create. The National Ed Tech Plan, and a shout out to the Office of Educational Technology at the U.S. Department of Education. It's a great document. The URL is up there, tech.ed.gov/NETP. I encourage you to check that out. Well, they defined that interactive learning that I hit in the research and the use of tech on what works. And they contrasted it with the passive use of technology, very consumption-based. My three-year-old does a lot of that. He consumes a lot in that regard. Well, that's going to be low level. So if our use of technology is primarily consumption-based, we're not going to get a whole lot of results to show for it. But the flip side, if it's interactive or that active use, and you can see design and coding and collaboration, the higher order where the student is taking that ownership of the learning, great things will happen and the research is backing up, that's worth the money. I like to ask this question. And Eric and I get this question probably every other week from somewhere in the country. Hey, Tom, we just got through this bond and we got this money. We're going 1-to-1 next year. What type of devices should we buy? I have to laugh and step back and say, man, if that's the first question you're asking me, please don't buy anything. You got to back that question up. You see, what are the types of learning and what are the types of devices in your classrooms today? And I'm not talking about Chromebooks and MacBooks and iPad and those kinds of things. They're all great in terms of hardware. But you see, that Chromebook or that MacBook or whatever the case might be can simply be a digital worksheet storage hub. And if that's how we're using it, we're wasting money. But it can also be a pathway to truly unleash student genius. Let's dive into the seventh key here. And this is that community collaboration engagement must be woven into the fabric of a school's culture. You see, I think sometimes we mess this up. Sometimes I think that the community's here to serve us as a school, but we are here to serve the community. We need to be hubs of our community. What does the research actually say about this? You see, every single day in every one of your schools, great things happen. Everyone. How does your community know? This notion of a brand. And I encourage you to check out my co-author Eric's other book that came out a couple minutes ago. I have no idea when this guy sleeps, called Brand Ed. And this notion of telling our story. See, we're doing great things. But what I know is that on the outside of our walls, they're quite often not saying nice things about what's going on in the inside of the walls, because quite often they don't really get it. They don't understand the full picture. And sometimes that's our own fault and not sharing the great things all the time. And how do we leverage great social media tools like this to be able to tell our story in new and in different ways, to be able to reach the audiences where they are? We constantly talk about meeting kids where they are, but we've got to do the same for parents. You see, if our main mode of communications are the once a marking period report cards, the once a month newsletters, and the twice a year conferences with the spring ones being optional, there's nothing wrong with any of those. But we did that 25 years ago as well. And so how do we leverage digital tools in today's world to be able to meet parents where they are in real time? You see, our world is in the palm of our hands, is it not? And so how do we make sure that we're meeting parents where they are? Let me give you another quick example here about community engagement and really collaboration. You see, that's a picture there of Mount Everest. And on Mount Everest, true story, there's actually Wi-Fi spots in different parts of Mount Everest, believe it or not. But what's fascinating, and we hit this issue hard in the book, is this notion of many of our schools are still not connected, although in the past 5 to 10 years, that number has increased dramatically through E-rate and support through the federal government and other places. But take a look at the statistic in the bottom left, some other research that we share. You see, 5 million of our nation's families lose connectivity the moment they step off your school campus. Well, what do you do about that? What do we do when we're doing all this digital stuff and we're giving a kid a Chromebook or we're giving a kid an iPad and they go home and they don't have connectivity? What about them? You see, if we don't know who these kids are, we can very, very create a larger divide. Well, you see, at the end of every chapter, and this is one that I hit real quick, at the end of every chapter, Eric and I dive into, you hear from either a superintendent of the year or a principal of the year and how they transformed their schools moving forward. This is one of the stories we tell. You see, that's Russell Booker, a superintendent in Spartanburg 7, South Carolina. And what Russell did is he knew in his county-wide school system, there was a lot of his kids that didn't have connectivity. So they reached out to truly engage and collaborate with businesses. And they started with the easy ones. They started with the public library and McDonald created this map. And you can see it. Check it out. There's the website, 7ignites.com. And they share that map with kids in their community, kids at school, of here's all the places you can go in your community that will let you log on to free Wi-Fi, that you are welcome to go work. You see, that's collaborating with the community. That doesn't take a whole lot of money. It takes time. But that time is invested in building relationship with businesses throughout. This is Kent School District in Washington. And you see in the bottom left, that's a Wi-Fi kiosk that they have here. It costs about $6,000. And they're putting them in some of the poorest places in their community, federally funded housing and synagogues and laundromats and places where people can go to congregate. What are the love that they do there in their story? I believe they call it their STAR program, is they reach out to families and say, Mom or Dad, if you're looking for a job, you are welcome to hop on a district device and hop on some of our Wi-Fi. We want to encourage and support you in that work. And as Eric and I write in this notion is connectivity, and the research will back it up, connectivity is absolutely a lifeline for progress. We need to help our students. We need to keep connectivity. We need to, and we share examples of places like everyoneon.org. That's one of our Future Ready partners from where I'm working at Future Ready. If you're not aware of everyoneon.org, they're a nonprofit. Their sole mission is to help families get connected. I encourage you to take a look at that. So question for you here from the chat window is, how is your district supporting students that don't have access at home? Is it on your radar? We have 5 million of those families. And I don't care what district you're in, you might think, well, we only have a couple kids. But if I'm that child, to me, that is everything. So how can we support that access? How we can partner and collaborate with our families? 8, schools that transform learning are built to last as financial, political, and pedagogical sustainability ensures long-term success. You see, the key to long-term innovation and sustainability, it's grounded in relationships. And a theme throughout our book, one theme is equity, another theme is relationships, and it's the relationships with those we serve, it's relationships with our board, it's relationships with the community, it's relationships with vendors that we partner with, and those regards there too. How do we sustain those relationships? How do we build relationships? But at the end of the day, we are in the relationship business. You see, when you walk into the faculty room, and just a quick example here, do you build the energy up or do you suck the air right out? You see, I've never met with an educator. I never worked with an educator that gets up in the morning trying to make everybody's lives miserable. But we all know that we've been in schools where that person that constantly brings people down. You see, I believe everybody on this webinar, you either build the energy up in your school or you tear the culture down. And that leadership and school culture where we began the webinar is absolutely vital to transformation. And relationships are key. And just like Eric and I end every single chapter, you are part of the solution. You are the ones that can transform learning for your kids. If you're a teacher on this webinar, do not believe that you are just a teacher, because you've got just the right opportunity to change the lives of children every single day. And relationships are truly the heart and the soul for that. So what are you going to do? You see, you can invest your time in a webinar like this, and you can watch and you can listen. But how do you grow? What's next for you? What's a change? What's something you can investigate? What's an area that we hit on saying, what is this research? I didn't know about that. What can you dive into? And we support all of those throughout the book. And we encourage you, as Eric mentioned earlier, we're going to continue this conversation moving forward. An LT 8 keys, standing for Learning Transform 8 keys. And we'd love for you to share your examples, share what you're doing in these different areas, share research that you find to be able to do that so we can continue this conversation moving forward. Really, really want to be able to do that. With that, Learning Transformed, as you can see, one of the handouts we often use, you can see in the bottom right there, tinyurl.com/learningtransformed. It will point you to a variety of graphics and images and links and those types of things, as well as the Amazon link that I know has been shared throughout. Thank you, EdWeb, for doing that. One of the notions I do want to reference here real quick is it does come with a free study guide. Even if you never even bought a book, you can go look at this online. ASCD has that. I believe that was shared in there as well, where Eric and I designed at least 12 to 15 questions for every chapter and every one of these topics that if we were working directly with school leadership teams, which is what we do every single day, what are the questions we would be asking to have leadership teams wrestle with to be able to move forward to transform their school so that ultimately learning can be transformed. With that, I'll go back over to you, NASP, Dion.
Yes, Tom and Eric, thank you so much for these great insights. I have learned so much, and we've been learning all together through the chat, through the various questions. Really appreciate the research tied to the practicality of the work. That gives us a good case to make the case around learning transformation in our schools and in our system. Really appreciate your insights about continuously learning to lead and leading to learn, constantly building trust and relationships as we're engaging adults and students through this work and empowering everyone to take risks with the aspect of being personal, collaborating, distributing the leadership, sharing the work, co-planning, co-constructing, teaching and learning, connecting, making actionable steps toward learning throughout, addressing educational inequalities, supporting how students learn, and preparing them for the world that they're going to face after graduation. I want us to, we've addressed lots of questions through the chat. Thank you, Eric and Tom, for that. And thank you, everyone, for sharing your resources and providing different aspects for us to expand on. I think what I would like for us to do before we close out our question and answer perspective is to do exactly what Tom and Eric has asked us to do on a regular basis, and that's to reflect. To reflect and plan our next steps. And so I want you to think about, how has this discussion shifted your thoughts about learning transformed through those eight keys that Tom and Eric talked about? Leadership and school culture, redesigning the learning experience, return on instruction, learner-centered spaces, professional learning, technology, community collaboration and engagement, and making sure that all of these structures are built to last. Take some time in the chat area and think about how this discussion has shifted your thoughts about learning transformed through those eight keys. As you make comments on that shifting of thinking, I want you to also reflect and plan your next step on how you might cultivate and sustain distributive leadership that would enrich transforming systems of teaching and learning. And then number three, and again, I'm going to post it in the chat, the last reflection and plan for your next step. I want you to think about, what ways does your current school, institution, organization utilize physical environment, policy, pedagogy, and professional learning to support transformation that supports students to be successful citizens in a global society through those eight keys? So how do you look at the physical environment, policies, pedagogy, and professional learning that would support transformation, learning transformation to support students to be global citizens in a global society? Again, thank you for your chat comments, your questions, engaging throughout the entire session. And we would like to thank our two dynamic speakers. So please, through the chat, help me thank both of them for their great insights, their super book that helps us think differently and change the paradigm in how we're looking at teaching and learning and engagement and collaboration and being more personal in our work. If you would like to connect with both of them, please continue with Twitter with Tom at Thomas C. Murray and with Eric at Twitter E. Scheninger. And these are on the screen slides. Ed Webb, we would like to also thank you for working with us to present this virtual book talk with Tom and Eric today. We thank you for your partnership. And we also hope that you will visit naesp.org for all of the great professional learning opportunities that we have. And also visit our national panel of new principals for first and second year principals who want to engage more in professional learning and with their colleagues around key issues and problems of practice that they would like to address. And that's www.npnp.org.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.